Growing up, I didn't go to church on Sunday mornings, but on Friday nights, both my mom and I would sit down and watch movies, and she would show them from a Christian perspective.
Growing up, we were out in the woods, so I didn't watch many movies, but I learned to look around me and find a spiritual lesson in everything I saw.
So now, I want you guys to experience the goodness of God in the movies we watch.
Join us as we unpack meaning from the movies we watch.
I'm movie apologist Clark.
And I'm Bethany.
And this is Movie Night Apologetics. Well, what is up, movie lovers? Welcome back to the podcast that loves to show you the goodness of God in the movies we watch. And we are in a coming-of-age series. We have explored Napoleon Dynamite. We have explored Pitch Perfect and The Little Princess and the Confessions of a Shopaholic. I don't know why I was thinking sophisticated there. I'm definitely not sophisticated enough for this podcast. But anyways, and now today we're going to be going over the famous movie that you probably never heard of, Simon Birch. Hey, have you ever heard of it before I told you, Bethany?
I hadn't. And every time I look at it, I think, they spelled that name wrong.
Yeah. So our last name is Birch, but it's spelled differently. Our name is spelled in the German way. This name is spelled like you would spell birch tree.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to be talking about that movie today. And we're going to be going over some topics or some scenes in the movie about how the Reverend should have handled Simon's doubt. We'll also cover what Simon's purpose is and how that relates with our purpose and us with God. And then I'm going to be like a psychiatrist in this podcast episode. And I'm going to be psychoanalyzing Simon's reaction at church when he was questioning the Reverend for having a potluck afterwards. I'm excited to see what you think of my psychosis. What? Did I say it wrong?
Psychosis is very different than psychoanalysis.
Oh. What's a psychosis?
Psychosis is where you're experiencing hallucinations.
Oh, well, I definitely, yeah, not that. I'm not on any drugs or anything, so that I'm aware of.
Well, that's a relief.
Though you did get me fiber gummies, and I mean, they may have been at Walgreens, or were they? I don't know.
Getting fiber gummies off the streets.
And then stick around till the end of the episode, because you may be asking yourself, if you're new to Christianity, is like, why does God refer to himself as Father in the Bible? And I have maybe an answer for that, or definitely a perspective, but somewhat of an answer. But first, we're going to get into the description of the movie. Bethany, you want to kick us off with that?
So Simon Birch is basically an unwanted boy because he was born with dwarfism. But he believes that he was born to be a hero, and he's always looking for that opportunity. Hmm. His best friend is Joe. Joe was born out of wedlock, and he doesn't know who his father is. And together they go through a lot of ups and downs before Simon gets his chance to be what he calls an instrument of God.
An instrument of God. I'm really excited to hear your take on this, because I know that's part of what you're going to be talking about too.
Ooh, it will. It will.
Yeah. So, you know, I thought that this podcast also needed some updating. And I wanted to start a new ranking system, because I was listening to another movie podcast and they had like ranking systems in it. I thought it'd be cool for our podcast to do the same thing, but obviously we're not using their ranking system, or else we'd be pirating what they did. So, but you came up with one. It's called the Water Soda Slushy System. And so water is basically, a movie is bland, it's not compelling, it's pretty dry bones. Like, can you think of a movie off the top of your head that you would say is water, Bethany?
This one?
Wow, I thought you were going to say soda at least. I didn't know it was watery.
I made you drop your notes.
All right. Well, that's interesting. I'd love to hear your take on that, because you'll be kind of surprised at mine. And then there's soda. It's a good movie. It's refreshing to drink. Like, you go in, you have your butter, your popcorn with butter, and you just have that nice, refreshing, carbonated, sugary drink. And then you got slushy. And, you know, slushies are amazing. They're rare because you only really see them at movie theaters or at gas stations. And every time that we go in to, or at least I go in to see the movie with my friend Blaine, at least half the time that stupid slushy machine isn't working. Like, we go to like a restaurant like McDonald's or something, and we're talking about, I wonder if the slushy machine is going to be working. And so we're like debating whether Blaine's going to be able to get a slushie or not. And half the time he does and half the time he doesn't. So
as somebody who's worked in food service, I bet it's working, but they don't want to clean it again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've worked at a fast food joint, and I remember cleaning stuff and cleaning the ice cream machine. We're like, it's not, you know, it's closed. It's not working. Whatever.
Right.
So it's probably that. But maybe they ran out and they just didn't want to replace it. I don't know. But we'll.
But the point is, it's rare to get a slushie.
Yes. Point is, it's rare to get a slushie at the Moscow movie theater because half the time it ain't running. So anyways, what in the world makes you rank this movie water? I mean, seriously. Like, I'm just baffled by that.
Really?
Yeah. I would at least thought it was a good movie. Maybe not, you know, some great, compelling movie like Shawshank Redemption. But, I mean, come on. Water? Like, that's a bit low.
It was watchable. It's not the worst movie I've ever seen. But on our ranking system, I think it falls into the category of water. Because I feel like it's very forgettable. I've already forgotten a lot of it.
It has been 2 weeks since we watched it, and we do have 4 kids, so
yeah.
Anything's forgettable.
That's fair.
I mean, I forgot what I had for breakfast this morning, you know?
But I also really don't like the points that the movie tries to make.
Mm.
I think it is an error.
And we'll get into this a little bit later, apparently.
Yes.
An error. Well, so again, we just have 3 ranking systems, and I would say mine's between the soda and the slushy, and it's so close to slushy in my mind. It's kind of like it's really hard to put up there, but I thought it was good because it had interesting ideas brought up in the movie, and I always love a movie that makes you kind of think a little bit. Even if the message isn't good, right? Like when I watched The Well doesn't really have a great message to it, but it's a very thought-provoking film. And that's what I think makes a good movie. And the other reason I really enjoyed this movie was I'm a sucker for narrated movies. One of my favorite shows is The Wonder Years. Like, I love How I Met Your Mother. I love The Sandlot that we're going to be doing in several weeks to a month or whatnot. I love movies that are narrated because you get inside the person's head, the main character's head of what they're going through. And I really appreciated that. And I also loved the red herring because I watched this years ago. And I kid you not, I told Bethany, I'm like, well, I forgot. I said, you watch. It's the father of Joe is the guy that was dating the mother. And I was totally wrong. I totally freaking forgot. It was
sad.
The other guy. So, yeah. So those are a few reasons why I like the movie. Why it dropped down just slightly, but then after thinking through it, it may have been okay. At first I thought the ending was great, or I thought the ending wasn't great because I felt it fell short of why Simon's friend Joe believes in gods. Like, okay, well, you know, just because he did a good act and sacrificed himself to save the kids on the bus at the end of the movie, and obviously this is spoilers for any of you. I mean, it's a 30-year-old movie, so you get what you get with this podcast.
If you haven't watched it already.
If you haven't, if you clicked on this thinking that we're just doing a review with no spoilers, like, you are mistaken. So just FYI, this podcast is always spoilers. So even if it's a new movie. So I, you know, just thinking about that with Joe and how he believes in God is like, why would he believe? Why would that be the reason he believes in God? Because he saw one good act. And but then it kind of made me think of when Jesus is doing his famous sermon on the Sermon on the Mount. He talks about no one. In Matthew 5:15 says, no one lights a lamp and puts it under a basket, but rather on a lampstand and gives light to all who are in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. So it kind of made me think of, you know, Joe, he saw Simon Birch's good works and in sacrificing himself to save that one kid out of the bus. It would save all of them, but mainly he, you know, he went and dove under to save the other kid and brought him out. And, you know, maybe that's why. So I, you know, give or take, I don't know what your thoughts are on my review of that part.
The same topic is something that I'm going to bring up later.
Oh, is it? Okay. So anyways, yeah. And then it's your part.
Oh, one of the things that I did like about the movie was it felt like very legendary.
It was legendary is how another quote again.
I knew you were going to do that right away. The kind of tone of the film is everything's exaggerated.
It's like the mother gets hit with a baseball and dies. It's like, by the time that people have gotten hit by 90-mile-an-hour fastballs, I mean, sure, they probably got blind. Maybe, I don't know. I didn't research this up, but there have been people that have gotten hit by a 90-mile-an-hour fastball and lived to tell the tale. But, you know, she
got bonked by a foul ball.
A foul ball that.
And dropped dead.
And even when it hit her, it looked like a little boom, like nothing. It's like, How?
Just like, bonk, guess I'll die
is
now.
Is your skull really that thin? I just, the people that die in this movie is just,
you know how, like, sometimes you call somebody you don't think is very bright, thick skulled? I've never heard anybody called thin skulled anymore. Like, that guy's so thin skulled, like, he's really smart.
I don't know. I've never heard of that. But what else did you like about the movie?
I also appreciated that Simon's size was not his whole personality, because that would be really easy to do. Be like, oh, he's the little guy. That's his entire personality. Look at him being short over here. Look at him being tiny over there. But he was a fully developed person.
Hmm. Can you elaborate on, like, he wasn't this over here and it, like, he wasn't, you know, tiny over here? What do you mean by that? Just kind of like what he did, like he played baseball, he swam,
right? He had interests.
Yeah,
he clearly had a big personality,
so he wasn't gonna let his limitations get in the way of doing life
well. And I like that the author, director, whatever, didn't redirect everything back toward him having dwarfism.
Yeah,
that would have been irritating.
Yeah, so it did have... I'm just still shocked that it's a water to you. But whatever. It's... You know what? It's water under the bridge at this point. Hey-o! I'm pretty good at coming up with stuff on the spot anymore.
Amazing.
Well, anyways, we're going to be... Oh, before we get into today's topics, if you guys are new to this show or you just haven't done this yet... please rate us 5 stars. This helps people find the podcast easier. And so people may be looking for new movie podcasts, and we would just love them to be able to find it easier. So please rate it. And then if you want, also email us at movieapologetics23@gmail.com. Give us your feedback on the show. Maybe you want a movie that you want us to cover. We would love to hear from you and be able to cover a movie that you want us to go over. So anyways, if you can do those couple things, that would be amazing. Now we're going to go into the part where we're kind of going to dive more into the scenes of the movie and just kind of like talk about them from a spiritual perspective, a Christian perspective. And first thing, what I want to do is I want to psychoanalyze Simon's outburst in the church service. And so I want to suggest maybe why Simon got upset. Because you remember, the Reverend was talking about with the congregation about having a potluck at church or after church.
Right.
And Simon, he gets up and he's like, why, you know, you think God care about having a small potluck? And he's just like irritating the Reverend, irritating other people around him. And I wonder, you know, if you really, because if you really broke this down and you looked at his history, you got to remember that he grew up small. He's born small. He's born in a very, you know, that hospital room that he was born in, you know, that the mother gave birth to him. That was the most like depressing hospital room I've ever seen.
Very bare.
It was just like white and just bare, and it's just like, ugh.
That's what I meant by the exaggeration of the movie.
It's like, I mean, maybe the 50s were, or whatever, were different back then. So you look at Simon's life, and you know, he was born small. The dad, the mother, they really, I mean, throughout the whole movie, they didn't care for him. I mean, you remember he wanted to stay at Joe's for a sleepover, and the mom's like, well, make sure you call your parents. And he's like, they're not going to care. And he calls them up anyways, and the dad picks up, and he's like, I don't care. Like, do whatever you want. Like, just, I don't care about you. And then there's a few other instances in the movie where you can see his parents really did not care. And, like, even at one point, Joe kind of got on the father's case, like, you don't deserve to have Simon as a son. And so his whole life, he had parents that didn't care about him because he was small and inadequate, probably, to society for them. Again, I don't know what kind of horrible parent would ever do that, or, you know, what kind of parent would do that.
Yeah.
But, and my mind goes back to, you know, if his parents didn't care about him because he was small, well, then why would God care about a silly little potluck that was insignificant? Shouldn't, you know, the Reverend, you know, pursue greater things that should happen? And I really think that his parents played a big role in, like, that outburst. Like, yeah, that was kind of a symptom to a bigger problem. Like, that what he was doing wasn't the problem. The issue was, like, his view about who God was because of the way he viewed his parents. Because if he viewed his parents not caring about small stuff, well, obviously he's going to view God as not caring about the small things in life.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And so do you think I psychoanalyzed that outburst?
Yes. I don't think that's what they intended to get across, but I think that's a very good interpretation. Because the way that the scene plays out where Simon gets up in church and is yelling, it makes him look like the hero. Like, he's making really good points.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah,
it's like, cares about the potluck?
Right. But then, you know, I look at all of the Gospels, and I read Jesus, and he's like, well, Have you considered the lilies of the field? Have you looked at the birds in the air? I mean, have you considered the sparrow? Like, how much more would God love you? I mean, he's looking at the sparrow, and the sparrow is a small bird. A lily is a small flower. Like, God cares about the small things in this world. Like, he's not just this. I mean, Jesus's first miracle was turning water into wine.
At
turning
a little
wedding. your water review into a slushy review.
Not happening. Not even Jesus could convince me.
Yeah, so.
And there's such a beauty to a theology where little things matter.
Mm-hmm.
There, during the medieval ages, there was this belief that we should create things that only God could see so that he could appreciate them. So in that architecture of the time, there are like beautiful sculptures inside of areas in the building that you never see.
Right. And you have to think about like his creation too. Look at all that's out there that we can't, like that we have explored that hasn't been uncovered for however many years. You know, God created the earth like, you know, thousands, millions of years ago, whatever. Age Earth, old Earth debate that you want to go to.
We weren't there.
We weren't there. But I'm just saying, like, you know, you think of like the really small, like colorful fish down at like 2,000 feet below sea level. And you think those fish have never been seen up until like recently or whatever. I'm just naming a fish because they're fish in the ocean. I don't have a specific name involved or anything like that. I'm just saying that we have all this equipment to be able to go down so deep in the ocean that we could finally see what some of these fish have looked like that have been there for however long that they've been there. And, you know, that's a small thing that God created when he created the world. And you think about outer space and like how much creation that there is just in the solar system. Solar system's pretty big and we haven't seen it all. So.
That's true. Have not seen the whole solar system.
Yeah, we haven't seen the whole solar system.
Thank you for telling us that.
You know, you're making me sound real dumb right now.
No, I feel dumb.
Why do you feel dumb?
Because I'm so tired right now. I just cleaned a house. I was gone for 4 hours doing that. And I'm finding it so hard to keep track of what you're saying. But let us continue.
All right. Well, anyways, it's your turn to go over kind of like some of your stuff, and then we'll go back to my stuff.
Well, let me talk about this film. So, the main plot is that Simon believes he's going to be a hero. He's going to be an instrument of God.
Mm-hmm.
He's just completely driven by that. It's like he doesn't believe he'll have any value apart from that. He must be used by God. He must be an instrument. After he accidentally kills Joe's mom with that foul ball, he said, you know, sadly, I'm sorry, like, I'm an instrument of God. As though killing his mom was something that he had to do as an instrument of God.
Some sort of, like, predestination kind of thing, just like, I don't know.
Right. He was always meant to. And that belief that God made it happen is a very dark theology. Mm-hmm. God is not the author of evil.
Right.
We can allow for it in our theology that God allows bad things to happen because he doesn't stop them.
Right.
But we don't believe that he does evil.
Right.
And for God to arrange for this little boy to accidentally kill Joe's mom.
Yeah, it's pretty dark.
I don't like that at all.
I don't. So is that what brought it down to a water level for you?
There's more.
Oh, okay. Well, here we go.
Okay. You would think somebody who's like, I'm an instrument of God, would be a stand-up righteous person. Right? Right? This kid? All right. When you really think about the stuff this kid says and does in the movie, he is a pervert.
I'll give you that. Like, I was kind of cringing at some of the scenes in this. I'm like, this would not even be on the freaking, like, this wouldn't be written in the script at this day and age.
No.
I don't, definitely not for, what were they, 14, 12, whatever they were?
I think they were 12.
Yeah.
And some of those scenes are so over the top. Right. I understand that 12-year-old boys can seem a little bit pervy.
Yeah.
But some of these scenes are so over the top perverted. Like, there's one where they're in a play.
And, I knew you were going to bring this up.
Okay. And Simon is playing baby Jesus, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So he is laying in the manger, and a girl he has a crush on is playing Mary, and she leans over the manger and he sees her cleavage. And so he starts groping her on stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so over the top.
Right. It is.
First of all, that he would do that at all. And second, that anybody would do that on a stage in front of hundreds of people.
I don't think I would have the cojones to be able to do that at 12 years old.
At
all. I didn't think I was thinking that at 12 years old, to be honest with you.
You see what I'm saying? Like, Simon is not okay. And then my biggest problem with Simon being an instrument of God was the whole plot centers around, he finally does it. He finally becomes a hero because he saves all those kids on the bus, and then he dies. Here's my problem with that.
Okay.
Okay, so they made such a big deal about the kids listen to him because he's little. You know, he understands, I was meant to be little because the kids listened to me because I was little.
Mm-hmm.
But then he dies. So what about him being a child of God who deserves to be saved?
Mm-hmm.
Why are those kids more valuable than he is?
Mm. Right. Yeah, I kind of see where your thoughts are.
That bothers me.
Yeah. Because it's one thing if, you know, God allows it. And then, but to orchestrate that, yeah, I can kind of see where you come from with that. It's just very weird theology. And I get that there's, you know, the Calvinism, Arminianism crap debate. But, like, you know, it's funny. I used to be, when I first became a Christian, I was definitely on the Arminian side. And then I went to my hyper Calvinism phase. And then I went to like a middle ground, and I'm still kind of at the middle ground between the two, but now I'm more towards the Arminian thing again.
Right. And Arminianism is free will.
Free will, yeah.
And Calvinism is everything's predestined.
Yeah, everything from the drop of a pen to Hitler committing millions of genocide, or millions of... Committing genocide.
You don't have to say the number.
You're right. So, yeah. I look at scripture and I'm seeing like, no, I think there's something to man having, you know, will. And, you know, Calvinists would say that man has will, but I don't see how it plays out. But, getting back to that, yeah, I understand how that could be kind of like, ugh.
It gives me the ick in the same way that it gives me the ick when people say, I just want to be used by God.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of that saying. Like, I like the saying more because I listen to the Bema podcast with Marty Solomon, and he says, you know, it's a partnership, like you're partnering with God.
Yeah.
You know, that is way different. Being used by God is like, I feel like it's kind of like the same way a construction worker uses a hammer.
Right.
You know, there's there's no relationship there. It's just the construction worker does what he wants with the hammer, uses it, and then when he's done with it, he just tosses it to the side and goes to the next tool.
Exactly.
And that's not the accurate depiction of being used by God. Being like, I think that has been a big, I just don't like that phrase.
I used to pray it myself until I started thinking, oh, please let me be used.
And I understand, but it's like, you know what? I'd rather it be a partnership, like, you know, a marriage, mm-hmm. you know, because that's what it is. It's, you know, we are the bride of Christ. You know, he's the husband, we're his bride sort of thing, that like, that's the image that he gives us in the Bible. And, you know, you and I are married, and
I never go, man, I just hope Clark will use me.
Oh, dang it.
No.
Yeah, I know, but that's weird. It's like when we look at people who use people, like, humans are different because they're sinful, God's not, but still, it's like, I don't agree with that saying, I want to be used by God. No, I want to partner with God and, you know, just have a relationship with him on mission as I go through life and, mm-hmm. you know, have relationships with the other people.
Right. I think being used by God also implies that God needs you.
Yeah.
Because God needs a tool.
Yeah, because a construction worker can't build a house without the tools. You can't put nails in a wood board without a hammer or some form of tool. Mm-hmm. You know?
But, so it makes you important.
Right. And we really value being important. And you know, there's something to that. And I think, you know, it says in Ephesians, it even says in the Matthew 5:15, like, we're created for good works. We're created to partner with God and do wonderful things in this life, mm-hmm. you know, to build the kingdom of God or, you know, whatever. But being used by him, I don't prescribe to. And I, you know, if people want to argue that with me or us, I'm sorry, but that's just, I just don't prescribe to that anymore.
You don't prescribe to it?
I don't prescribe. I don't hit this prescribe button on YouTube and then listen to all the videos. I say, no, skip, go to the other video. That's what I do.
I just hate it when videos try to make me prescribe because I'm like, I don't need your medicine.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so those were the few things that you found wrong with the movie, and that's why you rated it water.
Exactly. That was my huge problem with it.
Yeah. But that's the thing, is we can come on here and talk about it, because like Napoleon Dynamite, I think it's a great movie. You know, the one that, you know, we recorded several weeks ago. You know, I would say it's soda. But there's not anything really thought-provoking, because, I mean, it's, you know, it's just kind of a funny kind of movie. This one, at least, there's thought-provoking stuff, even though there's wrong thought-provoking stuff. It gets you talking and discussing and thinking through these ideas. And
it gets us talking and thinking through these ideas. It tells other people yes. who don't think of things through.
Well, you know, that it's a double-edged sword, you know?
Yeah.
Either way, you'll get a Napoleon Dynamite that doesn't have any form of thought, and then...
Napoleon Dynamite is not going to hurt anybody. I think this kind of theology hurts people.
Okay, well, that, you know, you got a fair point on that. I'm not going to lie. I can't really argue that.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, did you want to talk more about Simon's outburst in church?
Yeah. So, well, more specifically on the what happened after the outburst, because I was just like shaking my head in this. I'm like, gosh, you know, like, here we go again. There's another horrible incident. I don't mean to be prejudiced on this, but it's always the women teachers that, like Harry Potter is Professor Umbridge. And then this movie, there was this gal, was she a nun?
She was just like a Sunday school teacher.
Okay. And then, you know, when I had a teacher growing up at my private school, there was one gal that just got on my nerves. Now, truthfully, I probably deserved her little irritatedness, but like she did some things that I was super pissed about. Okay. Like I wanted to drink a soda during class. And I had the little 12-ounce can. And she's like, no, you better not take a sip of that. But the thing is, you could drink water. You can have water, but you couldn't have the soda. And you know what? Like, ooh, Miss Argabright.
Was there carpet in the classroom?
That's beside the point. Because we could drink the soda during our recess. In the class, but we couldn't drink it during class in the class.
I think you need to let that go.
I'm telling you, she's Miss Argbrat. I tell you what.
So you're saying you've never had a bad male teacher?
I can't. I'm really trying because I think a lot of the teachers that I had growing up were female, if I'm just being honest.
Oh, yeah. No, I think a lot of females get into the teaching profession.
So, you know, that's probably why.
But how about college? Because I had a lot of terrible male professors.
Oh, no, I had a lot of terrible. But they weren't Miss Argybright. I'll tell you about that much. Anyways, so I was just kind of dumbfounded by... with Simon's outburst, obviously he is very disrespectful and out of line. And yes, there should have been some talking to and correction with the reverend and the school teacher. But one of the things that I really didn't like about that was they really treated Simon poorly in that. Like the reverend really was irritated with Simon and his doubt when he was asking him questions. And then the teacher, you know, she basically shunned the kid like right in up in front of the classroom in a corner where everyone could see, and she was reprimanding him. And I'm like, you know what? You don't really change people's hearts that way. You know, you just make them, you know, kind of keep to themselves and not explore their doubt, have questions, and like, you know what I'm saying?
Shame's
like,
a bad motivator.
Yeah, shame's a horrible motivator. And instead of saying like, hey, you know, Simon, like, can we talk about that outburst you had? Like, that was say, for example, with the reverend. Great example, like, you know, he was trying to calm him down during that. He could have said during that, hey, Simon, you know what? That's a great intellectual question that you're bringing up about God. You know, does he really care about smallpox? Like, let's, you know, sit aside, you know, maybe sometime this week and talk about that. But right now, like, this is service. We need to continue with the service and, you know, we'll talk later. Like, he could have done something like that. Or the teacher could have said, hey, Simon, like, you know, what you brought up there, like, that was, you know, pretty hard. Like, you know, you want to talk about it? You want that to go through? Like, that is going to change Simon's heart way more than, Simon, sit down. You're getting out of line. Or, ooh, Simon, put you in a corner and, like, let's just have all the kids make fun of you and point at you and I'll reprimand you and say how, you know, bad that was of you to do that. Like, what's going to change your heart more? And I'm just sitting here thinking, like, gosh, you guys do not know how to handle people with their doubts, people with their questions, people who outbursts in church. Like, it's just like, hey, no, we keep that all there. You need to obey and... Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I think it's definitely aimed toward creating resentment. One of the things that the teacher did was she had Simon sit down after class, and she just wanted him to wait until he could apologize.
Right.
And having that much time to just sit and think, that just means you have more time to sit and become more and more resentful and more convinced that you're right.
Yeah. Especially for a 12-year-old. Like, mm-hmm. a 12-year-old is going to think they're right. Trust me, I was 12 once, and I thought I was right. I thought I was right drinking that soda, but maybe looking at it now, I probably wasn't, but I'm still pissed about it.
And if your teacher had been like, hey, Clark, I know you're worried about this. Well, she would have said, Kevin, I know that bothered you. Here's why I have that rule in my classroom.
Yeah, there was no why to it. It was just because in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, we could drink water, but we can't drink soda. That makes no sense to me. Why we can do one but not the other, and they're both liquids. But I could drink the soda once we go on recess in here. But I can't now. It didn't make sense. I wanted the why. The why behind it, not just a stupid arbitrary rule.
Right. It felt arbitrary to you, but I'm sure she had a reason.
I'm sure she did. It was probably because I got way too dang energetic when I drank sugar back then.
Or because it was a reward because it was full of sugar. So you weren't supposed to drink it while you were
drinking. I bought it with my own money.
Okay.
It was my...
Do you want me to find this woman and ask her about this rule? Because it's clearly still bothering you.
I can't let it go. I need to read Brant Hanson's book, Unforgivable.
Unforgivable?
Unoffendable.
Wow, fruity and slip. That's how you really feel.
It's unforgivable what she did. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And so, yeah, I just think, you know, when you're dealing with people like in their church hurt, it's especially with them, like, I wish they would have just asked him questions rather than jump to conclusions because. I think they would have saved themselves a lot of heartache. I think they would have saved Simon a lot of heartache. I think there would have been some healing there if they like really went through stuff. But it just seemed to me like they didn't want any sort of doubt. Like they, like the teacher didn't want doubt in their life. Like the reverend sure as heck didn't want doubt in his life. And you can just tell they, and I think a lot of people, and I think in church culture, if you're at a church that doesn't really talk about doubt that much. I think really it's because most people haven't really gone through that faith doubt crisis. Like they really haven't wrestled with those questions themselves, and they are afraid that if they do wrestle with those questions, what happens if they believe something different? Now their whole worldview is torn apart because. You know what I'm saying?
It is scary.
It's scary to like wrestle with those questions and go through them. And, you know, maybe that's what, you know, the reverend and the teacher were like. They didn't want to voice them. They didn't want to go through it. They didn't want to walk through it with Simon because they didn't even really walk through it themselves.
Right. I think that's the difference between a good preacher and a great preacher.
Yeah.
Great preachers have wrestled with the doubt. I think it was Martin Luther King Jr. who said that doubt is crucial to faith.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have those doubts and you're not talking about them, you're not thinking about them, you're not saying this is an actual doubt I have, then it has the power to hurt your faith.
Yeah.
But if you face it and you find an answer for it, or even just walking through it and saying it's okay if I don't have an answer, that strengthens your faith.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how many questions I have in the Bible, theology-wise, doctrine-wise, whatever, that I'm like, yeah, you know, I like there will be things in there that, you know, you ask me, I'm like, I don't know. I've searched, a lot. Like, there's a lot of different answers to some things. You know, I think one of the questions that I've struggled with most is like, what happens to people after they die if they never were shared the gospel? Like, I've struggled with that. And, you know, I've read some differing views on it. There's a book that I read. I forget what it's called, but it was like four different views on that. And it's just interesting. Some views, I'm like, oh, okay, I kind of see it. Some views, I'm like, yeah, I don't really see that. Other views, I'm like, okay, I kind of agree more there. But really, I mean, it's a hard subject. Like, the Bible's not super clear on it. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people say it is, but then I'm like, I don't know if it's as clear as you think. And so it's just one of those things that you have to wrestle with. And I just came to the conclusion at one point, it's like, you know what? I'm never going to know about this, but God doesn't call me to know all the answers. He calls me to be faithful where I'm at and help, and, you know, help people who I come across with every day.
That's really good.
You know, like, I don't know what's going to happen to the African person that has never heard the gospel. Yeah, I'm not going to know that for sure. God knows that. I don't know that. But what I can tell you is I do know that God wants me to follow him right here, right now in 2025, when I go to my job, when I come home from work, when I go to my church, to be like he is in love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, and self-control. He wants me to exude his attributes. Is that what?
Yes.
Okay, you're making fun. Again, here we go with the making fun of.
I'm sorry. It's just the way you said it was funny.
But it just comes down to, at the end, it's like, you're going to follow somebody, and you're not going to have all the doubts answered. You're going to follow a worldview. You're going to follow, you're going to worship something. I'm going to bank my worship and my following in the creator of the universe. Mm. And I don't, that's just me. And,
As for me,
that's kind of where I stand with that. So if anyone's like wrestling with doubt, really, find a good church, that wrestles, that is open for people who wrestle. If there's a church, and I don't mean to bag on these, but like, if there's a church like this, like, I don't know, like, I don't want to say don't go to it, but I think the churches that are really great are the ones that welcome doubters and like will really wrestle with their questions. I think that was one thing that was really profound about Timothy Keller's church in New York. Like, he had his church in the heart of New York, and he was an apologist by nature, but he invited the New York intellects to his church, the, you know, atheists and also different kinds of people. And, you know, he would talk with them about, you know, apologetics and how, you know, the God of the Bible and how all this works and how all this makes sense in a Christian perspective. Like, he would give, you know, help them walk through these answers. And that, I think his method was really cool. And so if you can just find a church that welcomes doubt and will walk you through that, and that they won't condemn you or anything, that is the best scenario. I think our church does a pretty good job of that. Like, we don't really look down upon people that go through doubt in their life. We try to walk through them as best as possible. I know that not everyone's perfect at our church that does that, but I think 9 out of 10 do.
I've been going through some doubts, and the people I've talked to, they don't even try to give me answers.
Yeah.
They've just been listening and recommending books and that sort of thing. But
yeah, so all we can do is point people back. Like, when I was going through doubt for 10 years, that's all Pastor Scott did, was he kept pointing me to the gospel. He kept pointing me to beautiful verses in scripture. That's all he did. He never was like, okay, Clark, it's been 9.5 years, but like, you need to get over this at some point. Like, he always kept pointing me. That's all he did. And that's all we're called to do, is just point people. We're not called to really be the ones that convinced them.
Right.
That's not our calling. It says preach the gospel. Like, it says share the good news. That's all you do.
Argue the gospel.
Or convince them. Like, it just says share. Some people reject it. Some people accept it. that's on them. They have that will. But, yeah. you know, all you're called to do if you're a Christian is just to share it. So
yeah.
Last thing I want to get to before we end today, and I've been noticing a theme about the movies that I've been doing, because part of this movie was Joe, he's trying to find his father because he is born out of wedlock, like you said at the beginning. And he's trying to find his father all throughout the film. And by the end of the film, we finally find out that his father is actually the Reverend. And this is another thing that I didn't really care for the movie. It's like, why would the mother not want the Reverend in Joe's life when he was wanting to? Like, did that make sense to you? Because the Reverend said, he's like, yeah, I wanted to be in your life, but your mom didn't want me a part of it, right?
I don't remember that.
No, you don't? Mm. Maybe I'm thinking of it wrong. We watched this a few weeks ago, and I can't remember the full details of why he wasn't actually in his life.
I mean, it sounded like it would have just been too sensational, because he's a preacher.
Yeah, that's fair.
It would have looked really bad for him.
Yeah, which sucks, because now you have a 12-year-old kid that's kind of scarred from this because, you know,
he didn't want to give up his career.
Ego, yeah. His career, his ego. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that was the case, I can't remember if, like, he wanted to be but the mother didn't, or if he didn't want to be but the mother did. And I forget that. But anyways, what I've been noticing throughout a lot of these films that, you know, before you came on anyways, is that there's a lot of fatherhood out there. And I've been contemplating this question of, like, why does God want us to call him father in the Bible, specifically more the New Testament, because in the Old Testament, that would have been outrageous for a Jew to call God father. Like, they really revered God's name in the Old Testament, and they were like, oh, you know, you can't do that. His name's so holy and so great. Like, how could he be like this close personal figure? Like, he was, but it was just different in the Old Testament. But the New Testament, Jesus steps in and he says, you know, father a lot. They're like, your heavenly father. And I always thought, like, why? Because we know that God's not male or female. You know, he says in John that we worship him in spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and truth. And some people think, well, it says him. Well, him in Hebrew, that's not meant to be like, you know, God's this big old bearded man in the sky kind of a deal. Like, him means like a person. Like, it's there to, you know, like, he's a personal being. He's not a force or anything like that. He's personal, like you and me, except right. He's spirit. And I was thinking, okay, but why does God want us to call him father? Why not mother? Or why not, you know, the great spirit in the sky? I don't know. And as I'm going through these movies that I've recorded, so the first movie that I ever did was On the Whale. I've done two episodes on those. And that movie, the daughter was mad at her father named Charlie for leaving her and her mom. You have National Treasure. You have Ben. He had a rocky relationship with his dad. Guardians of the Galaxies, though I did three, but in the second Guardians of the Galaxies, Star-Lord had father issues with his dad. The movie A River Runs Through It, the two sons had a very strict father, and that father was very cold. There was no really personal relationship there. It was just like the stern guy. You know, he probably did love him, but he just didn't really show affection for him at all. And then you have Radio. The coach was more concerned with Radio than the daughter. And so there was some confliction there between the daughter and the coach. Stand By Me, all the kids, except for maybe Vern, struggled with their relationships with their dad. Like, the one kid, dad, was just very distant from his son because, you know, the brother was killed. And then he had another dad, like, be abusive to the other kid. And, like, you just had all these different kids that their dads were just horrible. And then you had Iron Man. Tony Stark struggled to knowing his dad. You see that in the all throughout the Marvel movies. And then you have Star Wars, obviously, like Luke Skywalker finding out his dad was a villain. Like you see your dad, you know, do genocide on a whole planet and was a bad guy. And like you find out it's him. It's like, oh, crap.
No.
He definitely had daddy issues. And then, you know, in our lives, you know, specifically more like the human race, like we all came from Adam and Eve, and Adam is technically, you know, our first father in this world. And what did he do? He rebelled against God and he ate of the tree of knowledge of good and evil that he shouldn't have. And when God came to him, he blamed Eve and he blamed God. Like he was like, hey, you know what? The woman that you gave me, she made me eat whatever. And so he like put himself between God and the woman. And then, you know, like we often time like to, you know, blame Eve in this scenario too. And again, like she did mess up. She did sin. Like she is responsible for what she did. But after reading the, you know, those Book of Eden books, like she was actually truthful and said like, yeah, I was deceived and I ate. Like, you know, the devil did, he deceived me and I ate. She was kind of like the more truthful one out of them. And so all this to say is our first father, Adam, was a ginormous screw up and really caused this whole thing to collapse where, you know, he had this good world and now sin enters it and now there's death, there's sickness, there's all this crap, all this depravity in man, not total depravity, but like depravity enough where it's just, you know, it's just chaos here. And I think the reason why God wants us to call him Father is because he knows that basically most of the fathers that are have been on this earth have failed. And, you know, like look at the movies, like I would guarantee you every nine out of 10 would be there is something wrong with like a daughter or father or a son or a father. Like, yeah, you're going to get those few movies that have, you know, a mother that, you know, someone's struggling to, you know, more than not, it's going to be the father that there's a relationship pain there.
Yeah.
And I think that's why God says, you know, he's the father of all fathers. He's the father to the orphans and the widows, or yeah,
because it's a redemptive thing.
Yeah, because if it's a redemptive thing, like he's taking the place of Adam, in a sense. Like, well, Jesus took the place of Adam, but you get kind of what I'm saying. I don't want to sound like a heretic here or anything. It's not my purpose, but that, I mean, that's just a perspective I have. That's mm-hmm. what I, you know, these are the stupid things I think about when I'm at work, and just have time to think. So what?
Yeah. So you're saying that God is filling in for all of the broken relationships. He is saying, I know that you've never had a good father, and that's why I want you to call me Father, because I will be your good father.
And for people who are thinking like, well, yeah, but I see God through like how I see my dad. And it's like, I get it. I mean, it's hard because, you know, going back to like Simon, he saw God like he saw his parents, like, oh, God, my parents don't care about something small. God doesn't care about something small, you know. And some people say, well, my dad didn't care about me, so God must not care about me. And I just want to say, you have to look at the lens of Scripture and you have to see Jesus. And when you see Jesus do all these miracles, healings, raising the dead, forgiving sin, like being friends of sinners, like talking to people who have doubts, like doubting Thomas, going back to Peter, who denied him three times and still forgave him that, like went to Paul and forgave him of the sin of persecuting the church and whatnot. When we see Jesus, it says in the scripture, if you have seen Jesus, you have seen the Father. Jesus says, if you have seen me, you have seen the Father. And I say, if you have a bad relationship with your Father and you're having trouble looking at a heavenly Father, well, just look at Jesus. And if you see Jesus, that's what God, the heavenly Father, is like. And that's my advice for people who have father hurt, like Joe or like Simon, that just keep looking at Jesus, because if you see Jesus, you're going to see the Father, and that's you're just going to see the Father's character through Jesus.
That's good.
So do you have anything more to add before we close?
Do you understand now why I'm not that excited about Simon Birch?
You should be excited in the fact that at least his last name is pronounced the same as our last name. Maybe not spelling, but, you know.
So, yeah. Practically makes us famous.
Practically. So, yeah. No, I mean, I understand it. I'm going to take back the slushy. I think I'm going to rate it a soda. I do think it's good enough for a soda just because there's great talking points on it. Yes, the theology in it kind of sucks. It does suck. But I thought it was a really good movie. If you haven't watched it, go check it out. It's good. But hey, next week, we're going to take a pause on the Coming of Age series. And Bethany and I, we are going to go to the Moscow movie theaters. And we are going to see the movie Wicked. I'm not a big musical fan, but I've heard great things about this movie, and I'm excited to go watch it.
Yeah, I feel like I've already seen it because when it got popular.
Oh, don't tell me you watched a lot of TikTok on it.
No. When it got really popular 20 years ago, I think, my friend had the soundtrack to it, and she watched the play.
Oh, because it was a play first. I was like, this movie just came out. It didn't come out 20 years ago.
Right. She loved the play, so she one day played the entire soundtrack for me, and between the songs, she explained what was going on in the story.
Mm. Okay, well, you're going to have more information on this than me next week.
Yes, right? Yeah.
All right, so next week, Wicked, and I will get back to you if the slushy machine will be working. Because that may determine the rating of that movie, because if there's no slushy, that movie is not getting a slushy review from me.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, because they're related.
They are. So you want to kick us off with your quote here at the end?
Like my buddy Brennan Manning always says, real freedom is freedom from the opinions of others. Above all, freedom from your opinions about yourself.
That's really good. And like my friend Blaine always says, after we get done at the movie theater, don't party too hard without me. What? Catch you guys later.
Bye-bye.
Whether it's at home or at the movie theater, Movie Night Apologetics exists
to show you the goodness of God in movies we watch.
I'm Movie Apologist Clark.
And I'm Bethany.
And this is Movie Night Apologetics.